live, everybody. We're going to be talking about Abigail tonight, the new movie from the co-directors of Ready or Not and Scream 6.
Both, right? Five and six?
Five, two.
No, the co-directors of Scream 6. Yes. I'm only acknowledging real movies here tonight. Which is why I will not be talking about Abigail. I'm going to leave that to the panel. Look, I teased this with Mark. I know this can be blasphemous. I did not like this movie. I'm just going to get out of the way.
I can't believe that.
No, but here's the thing. Here's the heartbreaking thing, David. I was excited about this movie. I was excited by the premise. I thought, you know, this is a really cool concept, and I'm looking forward to talking to it with my horror peeps. And then halfway through the film, I was like, as with Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, I had that conversation with myself. I'm like, I cannot get up and leave. I just can't. So I made it through the whole thing. Kudos to me. So we're going to have a full range of opinions on this panel tonight, and I can't wait to talk about it. Mark, you really dug this, right?
I had fun with it. Yeah,
there you go. So that's one end of the spectrum.
There's the spectrum right there.
I'm half and half.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Same.
Okay.
In fact, so you were talking about going like halfway through the film, I was like, I can't leave. For me, halfway through the film, I was like, did something just happen and the IQ points of the writers just drop 50 degrees? Because it's like, what is going on with this dialogue and why are these people all acting like freaking idiots? Like, I mean, I was beyond confused by that. I was in it in the beginning, except for that device, the tracking device, which was like, wow, I'm sorry, did we get this at Toys R Us? Because I think anyone on the street could have seen that. Like, it could it be more blatant other than if you had someone on the back of the car, like with a, you know, thing going like this? It's like,
Marty McFly horrible. Back to the Future. Yeah,
that was horrible.
Well, here's the, like, we'll get into it, but first I want to go around and introduce who the hell are we? Why are we talking about Abigail? Well, I think we're talking about it because it's a new movie. I'm Ian Simmons of Kicking the Seat. We have Katie Glidewell, the bald. I keep stumbling over your last name. It's a lot of L's in there. Katie Glidewell, the bald in front, the artist formerly known as the blonde in front.
Sure enough,
that's right.
David, that's Katie. You got to work that into your brand somehow. That should be on a business card somewhere.
I mean, at least for the next 4 months. Yeah, I like it. I may have it. Happy to talk, Abigail.
There'll be some buzz developing over the next couple months.
With sheer delight. I cannot wait.
Hey, no apologies, but no more puns. David Fowley of Keeping It Real and Mark the Movie Man Krawcheck of Special Mark Productions and the Spoiler Room Podcast. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for hanging out and talking about this movie. I want to ask, because this is the first thing that I thought of when I came out of the theater. This is technically, I think, a horror movie. It's got vampires in it.
A lot of blood.
But it's also kind of a heist crime picture.
Sure.
But it's got that vampire element in it. With the exception of the Twilight films, I always kind of understood vampire movies, horror movies, to be scary, or at least some kind of attempt to be scary.
Well, I was
trying to imagine a universe in which anyone would be freaked out by this movie unless it was literally their first horror film. Am I missing something, or was that just like not part of the premise, part of the expectation going in?
I think the idea of I would love to be on the pitch floor for this. The idea of a vampire ballerina is, I mean, look, you're going to laugh at that. It's humorous. You know, it's like, I don't know where you're going, but man, here's some money to make that. You know, it's just vampire ballerina hunts down, you know, or not even hunts down, but traps a bunch of, you know, ne'er-do-wells in a revenge plot in a one location, you know, oh, that's cheap. One location story, you know, great. Let's do it. I mean, after Ready or Not, which had probably five times more blood, and the two screams, I'm sure they were like, here's your check. Go make another horror movie.
And they, but I'm debating whether or not they did. I mean, that's the thing is what I was thinking when I went in, this could be really cool. It's like Reservoir Dogs with vampires. You got this crew of people who are contracted to kidnap this little girl who's a ballerina. She's the daughter of a notorious underworld figure. I like that. That's kind of a pun.
It's more like Dusk Till Dawn, though, really.
Yeah.
Well, they're all like in this safe house.
Yeah.
They're hiding from. Well, they're waiting it out until they can all leave, and they're waiting for the big man to arrive. In this case, it's Giancarlo Esposito who kind of locked them in there, and they don't know each other. They're using assumed names. They don't trust each other, and there is probably a betrayer somewhere in their midst, and everybody pretty much ends up dead. Oh, sorry, spoilers. Actually, let me put on the banner just to be fair to those who are joining in. But no, it's so I went in thinking, okay, this is a cool premise for a horror movie. I'm thinking these people are trapped with a vampire in this house. It's going to be 90 minutes of stalk and slash, kind of like creative deaths, and you know, one or two people left to fight their way out of it. And there is kind of that element, but what there's a lot more is talking. We have not one, but two scenes in this movie that goes around everybody in the cast and talks about who they are, what their history is. The first time, it's kind of fake, and they get these nicknames. They're all like members of the Rat Pack. The second time, they kind of actually reveal who they are. But I didn't care about them halfway through the first round of explanations. I'm like, can you stop talking and just kill somebody before I do it to myself? That's not a threat of self-harm, YouTube.
I got a kick out of my wife watched the trailer of this, like, you know, while we were watching TV, and she's like, oh, would you let your daughter, you know, act as Abigail in that? And I'm like, absolutely. I mean, look, she has the best role in the movie, right? You know, I mean, really, I mean, it's kind of cool that the title character is played by such a young actor, and she's good in it. And I'm not going to critique her too much, because it's not like she's got a whole lot of, you know, parts under her belt there, but you know, I was impressed with her. I feel like she was showing some range here, you know.
Look, yeah. Alicia Weir is our mm-hmm. Abigail.
Very good, thank you.
She is the reason to see this movie. I mean,
yes.
Every time she was on screen. When you say range of emotions, David, a lot, if in a lesser performance, I could put that down to just kind of like bad writing, because especially in the early parts of it, she's like, she's vulnerable. Then she's got that kind of twinge of evil. Then she's vulnerable again. And then by the end, the movie gets really confused about who Abigail is, because it's kind of like the Kirsten Dunst thing from Interview with the Vampire, where she was turned at age 12, but by the end of, but she's been around for several hundred years. In this movie, like at the end, she's just still a 12-year-old vampire. Mm-hmm. It is as if she had been turned last week, because she's still got all these like vulnerabilities and daddy issues, which is fine, but she still conveys those emotions and those feelings as if she was a young girl and not like, you know, an adult going through some stuff. But I will say, yeah, she was terrific. I don't know what else she's been in, but this is a star turn. I think it's the wattage is far brighter than the film.
But you got Mark, you got me thinking about something though, really quick here, and maybe we'll just do a quick poll. If you were to stay at 12 years old, for the rest of your life, would that suck? Are there pros and cons, or what would you think? 12 years old, immortal, 12 years old for the rest of your life.
No, I would not. 18. Yeah.
Okay.
Because you assume that because vampires generally, and I'm going to get crude here, but generally they are very romantic creatures.
Mm-hmm.
They're
yeah.
kind of like associated right. with sex. And mm-hmm. I would not want to be trapped in my 12-year-old body for any amount of time, not even from 12 to 13. But yeah, just the whole like, call it mechanics of like adult relationships. Trap me at an older post-pubescent right. age. For eternity, and well, I don't know. I'd still probably at some point I'd probably just be running for the stakes, because you know I'm the older I get in real life, the more I appreciate the growing old, the idea that there is less road ahead than there is behind, because I think it gives kind of purpose. I think at that point, being 400 years old, it's possible she's been all over the world, seen and done everything. It's like, well, you know, where do you get your kicks? I guess you get your kicks by, again, spoiler alert, orchestrating a kid, your own kidnapping plot and killing a bunch of people in a house. Now, Mark, I do want to get to you because you said you had a lot of fun with this movie, and I think that's great. Where, like, tell me about like what you enjoyed about the movie and some your fascination with it, and help me understand why I may be off base, because I feel like I was expecting this movie to be something it's not, but Ready or Not should have prepared me for that, because I didn't like that movie either. Except for the central female performance. Samara Weaving was amazing in that movie, because it's impossible for her to not be great in anything. But that movie was a mess, and it is kind of this movie as well. It ends with this confusing like standoff between these, you know, supernatural entities I couldn't care about and bodies blowing up. I'm like, I nearly broke my jaw yawning. But Mark, go ahead.
Wow, what a lead-in. Thank you. Yeah, Mark, here's my opinion. Your tastes suck, but go ahead.
No, I want you to tell me about help me out.
You know, I consume a lot of indie stuff in that, and there's two different directions they could have gone with Abigail. They could have gone a straight, more scary horror, like you mentioned. If they did that, you would never actually see her in the trailer. They would imply there's something else in the house, not her. Mm-hmm. The fact that they put her right in the trailer as a vampire, she's the title character, plus you get some of the one-liners about you know, Twilight and that. This film is not, there's a number of different types of horrors, but a lot of times horror can follow into two categories. Really scary, like actual legit, like Exorcist, freaking The Shining, like, okay, I'm not going to sleep tonight type of horror. Or there's entertaining horror, to where it's not meant to be extraordinarily scary, but it's going to be entertaining for those who like horror, especially those who have grown up with, like, say, the B horror. This is a B horror film. Okay, this is a B horror. It's not. So it's made more for entertainment than scares. It's the concept. They take the concept and they're like, okay, this is kind of an interesting, yet somewhat could be ridiculous concept. I mean, we do, like you mentioned, you've seen it in Interview with a Vampire. We saw Kristen Dunst's character where she was struggled with, you know, being trapped in a 12-year-old body for like ever. And in here, there's just a little bit more playfulness to it. There's a little bit, it didn't take itself seriously, in all honesty, at all. It is having fun. It's made for horror entertainment, not horror scares. There are some scary elements in it, per se, but overall, this is not made to make the audience like edge of your seat. Oh my God, I'm not going to sleep tonight. This is, holy crap, look at that. You chuckle, you laugh, and you revel in the fact that this young woman holds her own with a cast of actors who are fairly veterans, who allow her as well to act. They don't go too far, and I loved her performance in here. Mm-hmm. I look forward to seeing more of it, and I say this fits in the same world even as Truth or Dare, Truth or Dare, with Samara Weaving. I'd almost say this almost could be in the same universe as that, per se. Now, it does that make it a good horror movie? It all depends on what you're looking for. When I saw the trailer, I'm like, okay, that's going to be an entertaining, goofy horror film. You know, and I love that type of stuff. And the fact I got to see something like that on the big screen was great. And it's the Abigail character. If they had a different actress or they played the main character differently, this film really falls flat. But she actually really holds, for a young actress, she holds this film together and she keeps it interesting because she's got some charisma. She's totally into this character. Yeah. And, you know, there's just this fascinating angle. I am with you. There is a little bit where you get to the end where you get the daddy issue angle. I'll admit I didn't quite care for that because I think that took a little bit away from her character. I think if she would have had daddy issue initially, but now she's just a cold-blooded whatever, you know. I think that would have been played, could have played even better with the ending. But they needed your final girl who is a mom to survive. I mean, it's no mystery of that our main character who, yes, spoilers, who survives at the end is a parent, is a mother character, okay? Because Abigail didn't really have that in her life. And that's the whole kind of underlying, I think, thing they're going for. But overall, I just sat there and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the craziness, the cheesy dialogue and everything, because the film never, even from the trailers, was taking itself that seriously. It wasn't saying this is a straight horror film, like say your Scream film, your Scream trailer, that's they're like, we're gonna try to scare the hell out of you. In Abigail, they're like, hey, check it out. What would happen if there was a young girl who was a vampire and she goes eating, you know? I knew how this film was going to play out from the trailer.
You see, I didn't. I mean, I got more of a, and I think it's because they included that line of like, I'm really sorry for what's about to happen to you. That was creepy. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think I watched the trailer maybe once, but I didn't, if it had calibrated me in the direction of this is going to be more of, to David, you referenced From Dusk Till Dawn, I think I might have gone with a different set of expectations. Right. I was expecting this to be like a horror, almost like Alien in like a house, but with a vampire person, right? But the problem is, for me, even as a fun, silly horror movie, I didn't find it funny. I think the problem is all of the main characters, with the exception of Melissa Barrera's Joey,
right,
they're all the wild hair, unpredictable, not sidekick, but the person on the heist team that doesn't belong.
Stereotypes. They're, yeah.
Right.
The archetypes. They're, yeah. They're the.
Well, no, not the archetypes. They're all the one archetype. Right. They're the Mr. Blonde from Reservoir. They're the misfits. There's a crew of like stone cold professionals, and you got the one kind of twitchy guy in the corner. Everybody in this movie is the twitchy guy in the corner except for Joey. But my problem with her is that I didn't buy her as whatever the hell she's supposed to be. You know, we find out, okay, she's a junkie. All right, sure. No. And then she was an army medic and a junkie. No.
That makes sense now.
Well,
if you're a junkie, right, that's a good job, because you could, you know, get benefits and you get your meds right there. You get some drugs. So, hey.
Yeah. But as far as a personality goes, I didn't see one. All I saw was, you know, stock boss babe. She had, except when she had that tearful phone call with her son at the end. But even like when we first see her son, when there's a, you know, the saver screen on her cell phone, I was like, oh, wow, she's got a younger brother. This kid looked like he was 15 years old. She is not that old an actress. So I'm like, okay, what? Did she have the baby when she was 15 and then she abandoned it to go in the army and then got on drugs? Like, who is this person?
Well, she's
not a great mom, so who knows? There could be a whole other backstory besides the whole, you know, being addicted to drugs. Like,
I'd push back on saying I've seen 6-year-olds that are 6 feet tall. So as far as how old he looks versus his mom, that sixth graders who are 6 feet tall. So
I was gonna say, like, Jesus Christ.
No, not 6 year old, sixth graders. There was a sixth grader
in my kid's
class that was almost 6 feet tall. So right, I mean, I can take that the kid might look a little older, that she looks a little younger, and that didn't bother me at all.
The problem is it's incongruous, because let's say, I don't want to spend the night doing age math, but this actress is not old, and I don't think her character is supposed to be either. So I'm just sitting there thinking about like who this character is, because they keep like dropping little hints of things, but I'm not getting anything from her as an actual person, but as an archetype. So when I start peeling back these layers, I'm like, no, this kid should have been like a child instead of like whatever that was going on in that photograph. She was uninteresting. Dan Stevens, who I have enjoyed in other things, I just thought, like, why is he doing this weird Cary Elwes impression?
I don't know.
Yes.
Oh, good. I'm not the only one who thought that.
What happened to his accent? Like, what was with that?
He's a New York cop now.
I mean, that's the thing. As soon as the characters get down to the basement, then he becomes like, well, I don't know what we're doing. I'm like, I'm sorry. What the hell did I just want? Why? What is going on? And I wasn't sure if, like, because Melissa Barrera, like, here, I'm going to read all you guys and, like, get $100 from everybody. And this is this. And everyone was cool then. But then when Abigail did it, it's like, well, I don't have to pretend anymore. And I'm going to act like my moron self. And it's like, I mean, Kevin Durant's character, it's like, look, I realize you're not the smartest and you're also drunk. But I didn't, like, you then just went to, like, a Forrest Gump level, and I'm not understanding what's happening here. Like,
was he trying to do an accent, too? I couldn't tell.
He was trying to do a French-Canadian accent.
French-Canadian, yeah.
And then he was letting it go, because, like, why am I pretending now? Oh, mon dieu.
What's funny is he's a Canadian actor, so couldn't even do that.
And then Dan Stevens, oh, my God, the overacting once he got down in the basement. And then the whole stuff with Giancarlo Esposito, it's like, sir, you are better than this. What is going on? I'm going to ask, though, of you guys, when you first saw Giancarlo Esposito, did he look weird to you? Because it's like, I saw him and it's like, he looked too smooth or something. It's like they almost de-aged him. And then when he turned around, it's like, did they like AI Giancarlo Esposito in the beginning and then at the end it was actually him? Because I was like, there's something going on here.
I didn't know it was a weird thing
that I just noticed, but I was like, why does he look like that? I mean, I've seen him, like, he doesn't look like, oh no, there he is. I'm like, what's happening?
I noticed that he was a vampire in the first scene that we saw him in, because when he, you know, they go to the safe house and he's like, okay, I'll be by to pick you up tomorrow. I'm like, he's either a vampire or he's a familiar. He's all part of this thing. And he has a big surprise at the end. And yeah, the climax of this thing, there's only a few people left, including our Joey character and our Dan Stevens, Frank the Sinatra cop. And then they go down into this basement, they fight Abigail, Giancarlo Esposito's character shows up, he's working for the mob dad.
He's turning the knobs and pulling the switches.
Oh,
right.
The puppets.
Pay no attention.
It turns into this mob intrigue stuff and like vying for position and, you know, join me and we'll, you know, we can take down the guy together. And
he's
all
like, okay, bite me.
Right. This movie was a bite and switch. Mark, to your point, like if they had called this movie something else and they had just advertised it as it should have been like what they were trying to do in From Dusk Till Dawn. Mm-hmm. It starts out, if you'd never seen a trailer for that movie, you would think it was George Clooney and Quentin Tarantino playing a couple of, you know, renegade brothers on the run from the law. And then halfway through the movie, it turns into a horror picture because they stop at a brothel. Oh, my God, there's vampires. This movie would have been so much stronger if these people kidnap this girl. They go to a safe house and then they discover there's something in the house with them that is killing them. Oh, my God, there's a vampire in here. But they keep going to check on the little girl. And she's because they do that like once, maybe twice in here where she's like escaping to go murder people and then going back to the room and playing all innocent. That would have been great if that had been the entire conceit of the movie and let the audience figure it out. It's a tough sell to get butts in seats of like, hey, look, these people kidnapped a girl. But I tell you, the word of mouth on this thing would have been amazing. And I think it would have done better than, you know, fourth place. Ugh.
Do you think she was the only one, only vampire in the home?
Well, yes. Okay. I do.
Aside from Giancarlo Esposito, yeah.
Well, yeah, apart from him.
Yeah.
Because when the late Angus Cloud dies, he gets beheaded.
Who is he? I saw the tribute at the end, and I'm like,
he's Dean. He's the driver.
Yeah, I know, but like,
Euphoria. He's known for Euphoria. That's his big calling card, and then he's done some movies. But yeah,
I've never seen it. Yeah.
Died last July, I think.
Yeah.
Like he gets beheaded, and I'm like, all right, let me do the math here. She's three floors up. or two floors up at least, and then they're in the basement, and then, okay, whatever. I guess I'm just supposed to believe that.
But you forget about the secret passageways.
Okay.
I did forget. Tell me about them. I saw the movie, and I can't remember what you're talking about.
There were secret passageways. Yeah. Because it's like the film tries to be like an Agatha Christie novel, and then has elements of like you guys said, From Dusk Till Dawn and Fright Night, Near Dark. I honestly thought when seeing this, because I never watched trailers, so it was pretty obvious that the ballerina was going to be the vampire. So it's like, okay, spoiler on that. But then I thought maybe they were going to do something like on the lines of Livid, that the directors who did the original Inside, it's a French horror. It's that Livid is not like Inside. So I was thinking, okay, maybe they're going to do something like that. But I was in it in the beginning. I thought the production value was good. I liked the house. I liked the cast. I mean, you know, I've seen everybody in different films. I'm like, okay, this could work. I thought Melissa Barrera, that's one of her better performances. Abigail was awesome. I mean, a child who also immediately embodies this like creature that's been alive for 100 years with flick flack. Like, she did great. But it was just the idiocy that I couldn't handle. I mean, Catherine Newton's character, I thought was dumb, like the random, like, I'm rich and I steal from the rich because my mommy and daddy are meh, 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 and I've got tattoos, so I'm cool. But I mean, the whole thing was like basically Angelina Ballerina vampire with daddy issues. Because it, as you were saying, like, you know, would you want to live if you were 12 and turned and all and like be a vampire that whole time? Her thing was that she's 12, but that her dad isn't paying attention to her anymore. So the reason why she's killing all these people is to get his attention and his love and all that stuff. And I'm like, really? That's why you're doing this? That's why you're having this awesome female character do this? Like, that's the most idiotic thing she could just be evil. Just have her. I mean, she says the dumb thing like, you know, I like to play with my food, which it's like gag. But the fact that she's awesome, like, well, you, huh?
It was pretty awesome though.
I mean, it was pretty awesome. Then she's like, poof. I mean, basically every scene that Alicia Weir was in, I'm like, all right, I want to see this movie. Just keep having her in it. But then again, there's the scene with like Sammy and I forget what Kevin Durant's name is.
Peter.
Sammy and
Peter?
Peter.
Yep.
And when they're in that area that obviously has sunlight coming through it, yet the key part of what they do know is that Abigail, you know, sunlight will kill her. And the first thing they don't do is try and rip off the boards for the sunlight. I'm like, what are we doing? Although like the fact that Catherine Newton was dancing around a little bit and stuff like that. And the opening with showing Abigail with those overhead, that was beautiful. I thought those were gorgeous scenes and that cinematography was great. But I just had so many issues with so many different characters. And I do like that Dan Stevens definitely was trying to embody Bill Paxton in Near Dark when he got turned. Totally saw that, but it's like, man, these directors really like to have their leading ladies just
covered
head to toe in blood. I mean, that is a sticky mess. Those practical effects I thought were fantastic, especially they had a new little insight into when sunlight hits a vampire. I mean, I've seen stuff before, but that was good. That actually was a bit shocking because, I mean, I don't even know if it seemed like that was one of the better performances by the actors when sunlight hit Abigail's hand, because their face is like, oh,
it reminded me of it was like The Fly where their hand come out and then it started like regenerating. That was nice and gross. I mean, I cannot fault the movie on a technical level at all. I do appreciate they committed to a lot of the practical effects. The house looked great. I loved the details of like the statues of the one statue that they have of Abigail and the dad that looked like they were, you know, from Pilgrim times or something like that. I didn't quite appreciate the saw kitchen. It's when Dean goes downstairs and it's like it's all lit and blue and everything. And yeah, it just like I don't know. It feels like it was a half-hearted homage, but also let's. I know the house was hermetically sealed from the outside world, but I don't know that they really should have explained the super airtight ventilation system that would keep a swimming pool full of decaying, liquefying bodies from anybody noticing that in the house.
Smell. Yeah.
There is some what kind the hell of smell was that? Here. I don't know how I'll rate this Airbnb. Everything else was great, but there was this faint smell.
Well, I mean, it's supposed to be a big house, so you could possibly say that, you know, that's something that they didn't. Because, I mean, it's not like, did she go through a door? Did she go through a chute to land? I forget.
She went through a chute. She fell down a chute and she was
out. She went through a chute. But, yeah, that was one of the grosser scenes, too. Like, her just, like, Catherine Newton just swimming through that and then getting in her mouth. I'm like, oh, that's just, man.
I've been to a house.
Oh, boy.
With three cats and a box that's not changed regularly. And you can smell that no matter where you go.
Well, is the house like 8,000 square feet, though? Because I'm sure.
No, but let's just do. We'll do some more movie math here. What's three cats? The smell of three cats' dirty litter boxes versus 100 liquefying corpses in a swimming pool.
Ah, man, I didn't come here for math.
Yeah, right. Now I will say it did. It did remind me. Well, totally accidentally, it reminded me that scene when she was coming out of the pool of Now I'm thinking about with. Kaylee Spaney in Civil War.
Oh, yeah.
Priscilla?
Bodies.
No. I could see that. You're right. You know, that's the problem with.
But that's another striking image. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
That's the problem with seeing so many movies back to back to back. It's like, wait, what was that? Was that? Oh, yeah, that was in that movie. And it's like, there seems to be an overlap sometimes. But it is, you know, I was watching this and I'm like, I don't know whether to complain or celebrate the fact that there literally is like a horror movie released every week, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Pretty much. And I mean, hats off to Mark for watching all these like movies that really don't get released. They get like maybe a day, you know, or two or VOD or whatever, or they're showing on Plex or whatever they, you know, but you know, awesome. Awesome that you do that, but we're talking like major studios releasing like a horror movie like every week, and so you have to, if you want to talk movie math, you have to do the math and think, okay, if they're releasing one every week, are they all good? You know, I mean,
no, but these are. But the Abigail is better than what we started out the year with.
Yeah, was it? No, it
dark freaking night swim, freaking night swim. Freaking Night Swim alone. Was I was just like, what? That was one. If you want to know a movie where Mark is going, what the hell is this? That was Night Swim. I'm like, why? Yeah.
And I haven't been able to finish that on Peacock. Like, honestly, it keeps coming up. It's like, you still need to finish this. I'm like, yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I will.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, and of course, when you're watching these, you know, when if apart from a screening or something, when you're going to like an AMC, every trailer is a horror movie. Mm. Because you're sitting there, they know you're sitting there about to watch a horror movie. I'm like, all right, I get it. But man, it's like you have Tarot. Even that movie Sting, I think that came and went, right? Or is it even out yet?
It was out in limited screens. I don't think it's coming out everywhere because we're not getting it here.
So I guess what I'm saying is like, okay, kind of like what Katie said, this is a good cast with a pretty dumb script. You know, stellar standout in the lead actor role. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't entertained. I did chuckle a couple of times. I was curious about where this was going to go, even though I kind of knew. Now, you know, and Ian knows this, it's always bad when you're sitting there watching a movie and you're, while you're watching a movie, you're thinking, you know what, would have been better if this happened. And I was sitting there even before we get to the house, established that there's something kind of like unique about this girl. Like, we see her dancing, but it's at a nighttime dance, right? You know, it's night. So there's rarely any daytime. The only time we see daytime is sunlight coming into the house. But it would have been cool if, like, she was like maybe a Instagram or TikTok sensation that people followed. But for some reason, she's kind of like, you know, she's always hooded and wearing sunglasses everywhere she goes. And she's got, you know, paparazzi, you know, or not paparazzi, but bodyguards and stuff during the day. And she rarely comes out, you know, during the day. And gosh, she must be like a vampire, you know, like people posting in comments or something, you know, just like I would like tapping into the popularity of social media. And then when it comes to, you know, this kind of realization that, like, first we want to see her, if we're going to see her as a victim, let's really dig into that. But I really just saw her as, oh, poor kidnapped girl, tables are going to turn because I watched the trailer and the movie's called Abigail. If the movie's called Abigail, she's not going to die. And she's, you know, she's going to come out on top, you know, it's like, it's Abigail. So it's like, I don't, you know, feel bad. I don't know.
No, I mean, you're talking about adding layers to this movie. I think that's definitely something that it could have benefited from, unless it's the kind of movie that it actually is. You know, you come in, you get laughs and some splatter, and then you go home. I don't know how you adjust the ratings for this, but I almost wish that they would tell me, like, what I can expect from the story. You know, am I going to see this R-rated movie because it's R-rated because adults are supposed to watch this, or is it R-rated because there's blood, but it's really being written to the level of like a 13-year-old? What I thought would have been really fun is, you know, they have this whole terrible exchange. It's like subplot 547, where the crew gets spooked because there's the legend of this one hitman who allegedly took out this crew of people who used to work for the dad, and they were going to turn state's evidence, and they got murdered in a penthouse along with a bunch of FBI agents. And like, oh my God, it could be one of us around here. Like, what was it? I can't remember. It was Valdez or something like that.
Yeah.
Lazar
was the dad.
Lazar was the dad. Yeah.
Or something.
We'll just call him Valdez. But within 2 minutes, you got someone going up to Abigail's room and then coming back down and saying, oh my God, someone around here is, you know, someone here is Valdez, because she pretends or whatever. It turns out she's telling the truth. But what they were trying to clumsily do, I think, is the Rollo Tomasi thing from LA Confidential. But you set that up and you pay it off 45 minutes later. So the audience is like, oh shit, I've been paying attention. It felt like the writers of this movie were like, we got to like resolve this storyline within 2 minutes because our audience is not going to remember who the hell or what a Valdez is. But at the end, it would have been just so cool, I think, if there hadn't been a dad, if that had been a cover story and Abigail was just, she was running this crime empire all of herself. And she was just using that ploy to, you know, further play with her food, the kind of sob story about the daddy issues. Because when you dig into it, like, I understand she was hurt, but it's been 400 years. Why is she still hanging out with this guy? Mm-hmm. What does she need from him? She could be going off and starting her own vampire empire, or I guess just vampire. It just, when you start to think about who these characters are, what they're supposed to do and represent, it just falls apart. And then there's a part of me that realizes I shouldn't care about any of this. I just need to watch the big dumb action, but I can't because it's not big enough, it's too dumb, and it's not exciting enough to be big dumb action. That's in my good, not so humble
that's
opinion.
That's a good pull quote.
He'll take up the entire back of the Blu-ray.
One of the lines I did like in the film, which is few and far between, and it's, we're at the spoilers, and it's at the end, and it's when Joey and Abigail are on Frank, and Frank, you know, is, you know, baby vampire. I've got all this power. I've sucked Abigail dry and all that stuff. But then Abigail turns. It's like, you know what's cool about being one of the things about being a vampire? It takes a long time to learn all the cool shit.
Yeah.
And then she does something, and I was like, look at you, girl, go. Like, even though, I mean, I don't understand how he didn't suck her dry, even though, I mean, she is, you know, a 400-year-old vampire, so I'm sure it takes a little bit longer to do that. Although he was very easy to do on Giancarlo Esposito, and who knows, maybe he was full. I don't know. But that, at least, you know, getting that power play back and stuff. They never made Abigail, even if she did have issues with her dad, she's like, look, I'm doing this for him. And it was very obvious that I was turning to my friends like, this is what this movie's about. I can't believe that. But you never actually saw her like complain, other than the fact it's like, yeah, I'm doing this. He's going to come and, you know, he's going to know that I'm as bad as he is and I'm the boss. And that's that. But it's like, it just seemed like it should have been, the whole thing with the whole thing with Czar being at the end, I just didn't even think should have been necessary, or making her Valdez. But then they gave away that she was Valdez way too soon. Cause that was like, I think what, in the basement again? I don't know. The basement thing just really knocked me out, guys. Once they got in the basement, I was like, all of the dumb horror tropes have come through. Let's split up. Let's look through the house.
You go that way.
Let's do teams of two, because nothing can happen. What? I got bit. So what? That's not going
to
do anything.
What's going to happen to me?
Yeah.
Look, that moment I liked, because there shouldn't have been a payoff, or it should have been a different payoff, because when Catherine Newton's character does get bitten and she asks Abigail, am I going to turn into a vampire? And she says, maybe.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, what are they doing with the lore here? What is that? And then she kind of turns into a puppet, which again, had to have been a different character. I have no problem with Catherine Newton necessarily, but like the way she was written, I was like, she was like a sub evil Ed from Fright Night at a certain point.
Yeah.
But actually, let's pull over and talk about lore for a second, because I need your help here. Mark, lore. I need your expertise.
Vampire lore?
I hadn't thought about this. So maybe it's a thing, but I thought for sure they kept mentioning it because at one point it was going to be a giveaway. How do vampires have a pulse?
It all depends on the vampire.
Yeah.
They've had vampires who have had pulses. We've had vampires that aren't Twilight, that have been in the sunlight, that don't twinkle, but they were able to be in the sunlight without any SPF 90/100. It varies. There's people who have played on the idea of vampires still having a pulse, and the reason they feed is to replace their blood. So their heart still beats, but they feed to there's been a number of vampire films where they still have a heart, but if they don't feed, their heart will start to you know, it be very painful for them.
Atrophy.
So they get fresh blood. It's like drinking is more of a blood transfusion than anything along the lines of a hunger. That's been done before in some I can't name any offhand, I apologize, but there's been bites where they drink because they need to replenish their blood, not because they need it for sustenance, like hunger, like in your stomach. They need it for their actual biological needs. So in this case, I think they're going for the angle of she still has a pulse because she's been feeding. And by feeding, she gets new blood, and she's got blood in her veins and such. So
I mean, they're not dead. They're reborn.
Yeah, they are reborn.
They are undead, yes.
No.
That's why they call vampires the undead, David. That's
it depends. It depends on the lore. It's right along the lines of zombies. Vampires and zombies have been done the most. Werewolves have been done pretty much the least. And we need more mummy movies. But anyway,
because I don't know that I've noticed vampire movies where they call out the fact that they still have a pulse. They make a big deal of it here because they keep checking for the pulse once they drug her.
Right.
They're like, oh, yeah, check her pulse. I thought for sure that the first time they did it, that Joey's going to reach in to feel the pulse and be like, there's no pulse.
Right.
And they were going to make a thing of it, and they bring it up again. So I'm like, okay, I guess they just have a pulse in this movie. It just felt kind of like an odd detail that they should have done something with. There's the puppetry thing. They don't respond to crosses. One thing I really do want to bring back in horror movies dealing with the supernatural, I want crucifixes to work again. Because when the hell was the last time that there was a movie that didn't subvert the trope and, you know, have like someone brings up a crucifix or a cross against, you know, the undead, and they just crumple it in their hands, or they throw it away or something like that. It used to mean something, but they're like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if, yes. But 30 years later, I think we need to make it surprising again.
Well, I mean, if you need to have a person who actually believes in the crucifix too, because I mean, that's one of the things, but I mean, they did that in The Exorcist where it's like, here's a cross, like, no, and all that. Sorry, another spoiler.
I stand corrected. Google says that vampires are undead.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And Google would not steer you wrong.
That's right. Nope.
There was also, again, going back to Catherine Newton and that puppet scene, when the sunlight was coming in through those slats, it was kind of an eerie image. I think the spookiest thing in this movie, besides the line from the trailer of like, you know, I'm sorry for what's about to happen to you, is her body like very subtly smoking as she's like dancing around and stuff. Like that was a nice touch.
I did like the teeth on these vampires. They were like shark teeth.
They were
they were Fright Night teeth.
If somebody only drank Mountain Dew all their life, and also was like a big meth head, and
I would say meth vampire teeth,
and also was a killer great white shark or something. It was like, what is happening?
Are you in the pitch room for this? It's like, so get this, guys.
I know.
Imagine a great white
guys. Meth. I couldn't sleep last night. I gotta share this.
Yeah. Hold on. I got something. It's like, were you on meth when you pitched that? It's like, maybe.
Sponsored by Baja Blast.
Yeah.
Mark, if anyone would know this, you would know this, because you shared the teaser image for Crack-A-Dial.
Ah,
indeed.
Hats off for that one.
Yeah, that's better than Crack-Coon, which is also being made. So,
wow. But I got to ask, has there been a crystal meth vampire movie?
There has to have been.
Vampire movie, I don't think so.
Not yet.
Not yet. There hasn't been a actual crystal meth vampire movie. No.
No.
There have been vampires who do drugs, but it doesn't really affect them too much because they're vampires. So I mean they get high. I mean, if you look at Blade trilogy, they snorted cocaine, I believe, in the party, and they enjoyed it. So, but we haven't had like a vampire go crazy after doing meth, though I think they should now.
But wait,
no, here's
I'm waiting for here's the title, Bitten to Meth.
Oh, nice. I like that. Bitten to
Done. Meth. I'm going to look. The first movie, though, in this new trilogy that we're planning here in the live stream that we're going to copyright, Kicking the Seat 2024. I'll cut you all in. Crackula.
There you go.
Featuring the main character of Vlad the Inhaler. We're gonna do
asthma.
That
yeah
no he's inhaling all the drugs. Oh my gosh, and his inhaler looks like a heart. There you go.
Nice.
So yeah, we're getting way far afield, which is okay because we're talking about Abigail. Is there a sequel in here? They leave it open? I couldn't quite tell.
I mean they left it open. I mean, the father and daughter are still standing, and
I mean, I feel like they left it about as open as they did Ready or Not.
Yeah, Ready or Not. That's what it, yeah.
Which I think Ready or Not is like, you know, one and done. But I mean, you know, as you guys said, I definitely feel like this is the same universe. So I would not be surprised if possibly there's a third film with maybe Melissa and Samara coming together somehow. Because I mean,
I'd watch that movie and the sequel.
This is a crazy world they're living in. So who knows what else could be there?
I'm,
you know,
maybe it could be bitten to meth that they'll be
there
in.
You go.
Trademark pending. Katie Glidewell said that first. You heard it here right now.
Oh boy.
Bitten to meth.
Yeah.
Speaking of same, did this feel like the almost like the same house as Ready or Not?
Almost.
No, Ready or Not. I mean, that house, you could like drive a car. You could drive a car through those hallways.
Okay. Yeah.
This one was, I mean, this one was big. Don't get me wrong, but this was more like a state big, like hunting thing. And I know they had the big buck in the front and all that stuff. But yeah, the Ready or Not house was just insane money. This is like big money. Ready or Not is insane money.
This is like, if you were to zoom out, I think the Ready or Not house would be on top of the hill, and this would be down where they keep the pores of that community.
The pores.
Yeah.
The pores.
The help.
There we go. The pores.
The help probably stayed at the
poor house.
There you go. Yes. Yes. That's actually the name of a bar.
I know.
P-O-U-R. P-O-U-R. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Love it. Okay. So anything else we want to cover regarding Abigail? What am I missing?
The music, I thought the end score credit music was actually really good. It was impactful and it felt very voluminous for, when I was sitting there, I was like, I could see, and I actually thought the music in general was, not bad. They didn't have the cheesy, like, here's your stock songs that we can always say. It's like, you know, something like the Monster Mash or something like that. So I'm glad they at least didn't have that.
I like that they didn't go with your standard classical needle drops for everything.
Yeah.
There were a few, but some of the classical pieces that they picked were ones that you may not have heard often in a film. And I enjoyed that quite a bit as well. Because, you know, otherwise you could get, you know, Hall of the Mountain King. You could get Rise of the Valkyrie. You get all these are like notable, and they didn't go with that with everything. And I liked that as well. I liked the fact that they just picked, you know, some classical pieces that weren't necessarily like, oh, I know the title of that one, you know, but at the same time, it fit, you know.
That's Brian Tyler, the same guy that scored Scream from 2022 and Ready or Not. And
he's a decent composer, he's done
a Marvel guy.
He does a lot of horror stuff and thrillers.
Yeah, actually made sure to write that down in my scribbles that it's like, I like this end credit score. It's like, okay, I'll give it that. I stuck all the way through this movie, even though I was like rolling my eyes through the majority of it. It's like, oh, yawn. I can't believe you said that. But that was not bad. And again, I thought Melissa Barrera's performance, one of her better ones that I've seen.
And that's sad because I thought she was you have your preferences, but I thought she was much better in Scream because I thought she was playing. I understood who her character was supposed to be. In this one, I was like, they keep like revealing all this stuff, but none of what they're revealing matches what I'm seeing on screen. Like when I think of a drug addict with a shady past, I think of Shawnee Smith from the Saw franchise. Like that's someone who you could see. Yes, she's definitely kind of twitchy, but she's also sort of in control. And the whole like, yeah, let's not even get into the medic business. But Mark, to your point, I'm going to posit something here. I think Ride of the Valkyries is the fortunate son of overused movie scores. Yeah.
Oh, or taking care of business.
Mark, do you have like, because you're a score guy, do you have a like a database somewhere of like where like the most overused songs and movies and like all the places they appear?
Please work on that.
No, but I could probably put one together. Any Vietnam song would be easy because you're gonna have CCR.
Yeah,
you're gonna have Fortunate Son,
Springfield.
You're gonna have Fortunate
Son. Something happening here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if it's a Vietnam movie, that's just, you know, you get CCR's greatest hits and you just put it in the CD player and press play during which scene you want it to play during. And that's
what it is good for. And absolutely, we're in Vietnam, everybody. We're in Vietnam. that CCR, it's like, what year is this made? I don't know what year it's made, but it's definitely set in 1968 to 1973, because that's what all this music is. 24/7. We're in Vietnam.
Well, so yeah, I think this is a good place to leave it. Abigail 2024. That's the thing is I'm glad, Mark, I'm glad you liked it. I'm glad other people didn't hate it. I was just kind of indifferent. I think once I got over my disappointment, it wasn't an angry disappointment. It was more of like, I couldn't believe that I left the house to go to a theater to pay movie theater money to watch this movie. It's kind of like Night Swim, like, is that what it's called? Katie, that you were talking about, you didn't think you'd go back and finish it. The only reason I'm glad I went to the theater is because I couldn't walk out, whereas this one I could easily see pausing and be like, I'll get back to it later, and then 5 years later it's like, oh, I never finished Abigail, which would have made for a really awkward live stream. One second, we've got comments. Let's see. Oh my gosh, okay, hold on. First of all, we're going to welcome Renee Cruz from the top of the show. I'm going to read this. Rocket Red Countdown Liftoff.
Yay for Spam Bots.
San Francisco. I was 12.
Hooray, Spam Bots.
What do you mean Spam Bot? These are the secrets of the universe, Mark.
Send us your photos, Renee.
She looks really smart.
Wow.
She wears her intelligence. She's got a lot on her chest.
Like the fact that she not only has like the umlaut, but then also an apostrophe. Like that's kind of different. I mean, I don't know. She's got.
I thought you were going to go with the angle of she wears her intelligence on her sleeves, but she's wearing a bikini.
That's true. I think that's her LinkedIn photo.
All right. Sorry, Renee. If you're a real person, I apologize.
Hey!
Petty joining us. Thank you very much for 1,000 Argentinian dollars. Thank you. Greetings to the most powerful critics on the planet. Ian, I have a doubt that has been gnawing at me for a long time. When will we open the bottle of JB that is seen in the background? Never, Petty. And I'm going to...
Case of emergency. Case of emergency?
No, never. I don't know if you can quite see it. It didn't used to be in that nice, semi-expensive glass and wood case, but
until
it is now.
Signed.
Yes, it's signed by Giallo director Sergio Martino that I interviewed. I almost said invented. I didn't make that guy. interviewed when he was in town for a rare appearance from Italy earlier this year with Brian Martinez of the Giallo Room. So you actually can find that interview, if that sort of thing interests you, up on Kicking the Seat YouTube channel. It was a lot of fun. And he signed my J&B Scotch bottle with, if you're a fan of Giallo, you know that any Giallo worth its salt has a bottle of J&B Scotch somewhere in the movie. It's a great Easter egg.
Yes, it does.
let's see. Please introduce the new teenager to the round table. I don't quite understand this one. Who's the new teenager?
Katie. Referring to Katie, I think.
Oh, well, me? Katie, you're yeah, yes. I think that's really flattering. I'm not going to say she's not a teenager. I don't want to like be like all indignant and stuff. But no,
I'll tell you why. Because I'm like the lady on Saturday Night Live. I'm 50. I'm 50 years old. So I am not a teenager. I'm a teenager with four times the experience. I can't count. So I am not a teenager, but thank you if that's who it is. Or maybe you're talking about you guys. I don't know.
He's talking about you.
Oh, he's talking about me. Yeah. Okay. No.
I'm glad I've got you here, Mark, because I never would have pieced that together. I'm like, what?
I knew immediately who he was referring to. So,
okay. Oh, and of course, he's going to clear it up now.
There you go.
It's for Katie.
Oh, for me. Thank you.
Yeah. Petty is our Argentinian super fan. It occurs to me. I don't know if you've been on a show that Petty's been on, but he hangs out in the chat and is very generous with the super chats. So. Yeah, Katie Glidewell. Again, I will say your name one of these days without tripping over it the first time.
It's got a lot of L's.
Yeah. But you are the bald in front, aka the blonde in front. All your info is going to be down below. So yeah, definitely, Petty, check her stuff out. I'm Ian Simmons of Kicking the Seat, Mark the Movie Man Krawcheck of the Spoiler Room and Special Mark Productions, and David J. Fowley of Keeping It Real. Thank you all for, yes, I'm talking to you, David, right there. Thank you for hanging out and talking, Abigail. Yeah, it was a very interesting discussion. In cases where I don't enjoy the film, I tend to really enjoy the movie. Or not the, that made no sense. The movie discussion.
Yeah,
yeah, like,
there you go. That's where you're going with it, Jamie.
Yes.
I've been up way too long today. But honestly, I was kind of dreading this conversation. Like, are we going to have much to talk about? It turns out we did. So, yeah. Thank you, gang. And thank you all there. Thank you out there, everyone. I will learn how to talk.
Me talk pretty one day. Yeah. There you go.
Right. Katie, you told us what that is before we went live. So what is that you're holding up?
Barf bag.
This is a make. What'd you say?
Barf bag.
No. I mean, even though there was a huge barf scene in
that
the
was
film,
pretty good.
That was
my poor friend. That was my set. My poor friend. He cannot handle it when people barf on screen. So it's like when that was going on and then it kept going on, I was like a mom. I was like, no, just cover your eyes, baby. Just cover your eyes. Don't look. I'll let you know when it's done. This is a makeup bag that the marketing people sent me. I couldn't go to the screening and they were kind enough to send me this because I told them, like, look, I'm going to be on a few of these and I'm going to show this off. So it's cute. Nice. But yeah, it's basically, look, if you don't know that she's evil, she's covered in blood and she's a ballerina, then I feel sorry for you. You don't need to watch the trailer. You don't need to watch much. There's fangs on the eyes. Angelina Ballerina, vampire with daddy issues. And that's it.
I got to get the movie poster, though. That movie poster is still one of the best movie posters I've seen out there with the blood around. You don't see it there because it's black, but when you've got that full lobby poster where she's laying like that, yep, and it's blood on the edge of the...
Yeah. I've not seen that.
You've not seen that one? It's that shot.
Yeah.
It's that shot where she's looking up like that, but where you see black there, it's actually blood along the bottom, like, third of her dress all the way around. And it's, like, perfectly cinematic. It's a very enrapturing poster. It's a it's an awesome poster.
And I mean, the beginning of the film shows, like, I thought I had hope for this. Like, those are beautiful shots of her dancing. And then it gets to the middle. But we talked about that many times. So,
well, I will say, I will let you go in just a second. I appreciate it. But yeah, I agree with you, Mark. I was actually going to say something right before you said it. So I'm glad you brought it up. That is one of the more striking pieces of marketing that I've seen in a long time. It's very simple. It's very striking. And I'm glad it's not just like hovering faces.
Let's cram the entire cast on the poster.
Marvel.
And then look confused. Like,
let's see. Who that swag.
What? Yeah.
Petty says the swag is much better than what they gave in Dune. No, that's not true. Cause I still have the fuck bucket.
You do have that? Oh, well.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
Who doesn't?
I know
I moved it, but yeah. It's over there. You can't see it. And David Wilt joined us right at the end saying, I think what makes the Ghostbusters movie such an iconic franchise is that it's all about the values of teamwork. It's sort of like a Four Musketeers type movie. I agree. I have no idea what that means in terms of the context of Abigail, but I appreciate the sentiment, David.
Maybe Abigail needed some Ghostbusters
teamwork.
I don't know.
He could be catching up to the conversation as well, because he did mention Ghostbusters earlier.
Oh, that's true. Yes. Okay. I remember that now.
Did you mention Ghostbusters earlier?
Yeah, he mentioned
Ghostbusters.
I did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Because so very good deep cut.
It's the same thing how he's saying, like, by the middle of Ghostbusters, it's like, what are we doing? And then it's like, yeah, because the middle of this, it's like, what the fuck happened? Like, everyone got dumb in the basement.
Pass the smelling salts to Bill Murray.
Yes.
All right, well, I'm gonna pass the show back to you guys so you can enjoy your evening.
Take over and
end the stream. No, anybody, I seriously, I'm stumbling over my words tonight. It's really bad. I have not been drinking
reboot.
Except for coffee. Yeah, I do need to reset.
Reboot overnight.
Seriously.
Clear your cookies and cachet.
There you go.
I'm not going to clear my cookies in front of you. Anyway, everybody out there, thank you. If you're hanging out with us live, we really appreciate it. The comments, the engagement, the fun of watching us talk about Abigail. Horror! I wish this were a horror movie. If you're watching this on the replay, let us know what you thought of Abigail. And what would you say is your favorite kind of horror movie, or even a horror movie that you would recommend in lieu of this for those who are like, because we're saying... Yeah. This movie has some stuff going for it. It's not quite there. Maybe you've seen something that you think is more up what we're looking for. Mark, this is your jam and your jelly. So,
or what's your favorite vampire ballerina movie?
Not because
someone's going to say Abigail. Yeah, what?
Livid.
I gotta see this Livid movie.
Livid.
You need to look at French. You know, French extreme horror. But these.
But you said it's from.
Bad. It's not as bad as Inside. That's the thing. It's like when you know that it's directors from Inside and then you go into it, it's like, oh, this is not, but it's not. But it definitely has like some creepy factors to it. So I thought that's what they were kind of going with this. No.
I swear we're going to end this in a second, but I just wanted to say I caught you referencing Livid earlier and you mentioned the directors of Inside. I've seen Inside. It's been about 10, 12 years, but wow. I think I watched that and Martyrs like within a week of each other. And
we're not talking
about
the Willem Dafoe Inside from last year.
We're talking about the French extreme from like 2007 Inside.
Okay. I still can't look at giant scissors and not like wince. Anyway.
Yes.
Everybody, thank you so much. Take care. And this has been Kicking the Seats review of Abigail. And now we're going to end the stream. Good night.
Oh, bye.